Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, the circus, Renaissance fairs, and Doritos.
Whether it's target cutting with the whip, lighting a whip on fire, fancy whip cracking, there's a whole other set. I think Renaissance Fair it's a place where you can go and be yourself, no matter how weird yourself is. So these whips are so freaking heavy. And the whole time I'm swinging this being like, oh God, just don't dislocate your shoulder.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. I want to get right to our first guest. This is circus and Renaissance Fair performer Jack Lepiarz, perhaps better known as Jack the Whipper. So how did you get into this?
I grew up in the circus. My dad, when I was a kid, was working with Big Apple Circus. And we left the circus when I was six and started doing Renaissance fairs around the country. My dad eventually started his own show, did school assembly programs, theater programs. So I had that taste of the life all through my childhood. And at the same time, my mother was a college professor. She's now retired in Florida. And so I still got a normal education on top of it.
Looking back, was that kind of an interesting life?
It's definitely an interesting life. Being the circus kid is really cool when you're six, and it stops being cool around 12 up until, I would say, like college. So like that whole stretch of like middle school, high school, not a fun time.
We all have those teenage experiences like, I don't want to be my parents. But then how did you find yourself back in it?
So that's a really easy question. I was working for an ice cream shop and I was making $6.25 an hour. And my dad called me. He was like, I need some help with this show. I will pay you. I think it was the equivalent of $50 an hour. And I was like, okay. All right. You can make a living with this and much better than, you know, the minimum wage at the time. And so I think I was 16 then, and I hadn't done anything with him for about 5-6 years. And suddenly I was like, oh, okay, well let's start relearning some of these skills, learning skills that I never had in the first place. And then when I went off to college, it was like, all right, I can go back to scooping ice cream, or I can just, you know, go out on the streets of Boston and just street perform and see if I can make some money that way. And it turned out that just by street performing in like September, October, and then again in April, May, when it was warm enough, I could make enough to kind of like have spending money throughout the year.
I wouldn't say necessarily lucrative, but that's the first word that jumps into my mind. Like, you can do this full time and be good?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So my dad has been a full-time circus performer essentially his entire adult life. He worked when he was very, very young, kind of worked in a factory, drove cab just to kind of like pay the bills. But since I would say about 30 years old, he has been a full-time circus or Renaissance fair performer. No side hustle, nothing like that. And he let's put it this way, he's put multiple children through college with that. I think there's this image of circus people and ren fair people of, you know, they're there because they don't have anywhere else to go. But if you have the right skills, it can be a very good career.
Are there a lot of people that have those right skills? So like, you can do this, but you got to be really good.
I think where you get it the most is sort of in my line of work, where you're the variety act. You're not, let's say, a member of the cast at the Renaissance Fair. You're not working at a booth or something like that. So when you have a variety act, whether it's myself, someone like Paolo Garbanzo, the juggler, you're in Arizona. So like Adam Winrich at the Arizona Renaissance Fair, those are people who can make a solid living and support themselves off of that.
Now, when you do like kind of the variety show, for people who aren't familiar, I know that you're known mainly for the whipping, but what all kind of, what's the show? What do you do? All that kind of stuff.
Well, so just so I can backtrack, a variety show is sort of anything that's not, let's say, doing Shakespeare. So just variety circus tricks. So my big thing that I do that you see on TikTok, Instagram, all that is the musical whipping. So I'll take two whips, use them to make a beat, and then I will improvise lyrics as best I can on the fly with what the audience gives me. And that's what gets posted to social media because that's all improv. I kind of related to, it's like a stand-up comedian's crowd work. It's because it's different every show, I'm fine putting that up there. But then after that, I have, I would say, about 45 minutes of completely, you know, scripted material that is a mix of stand-up and circus tricks. So whether it's target cutting with the whip, lighting a whip on fire, fancy whip cracking, there's a whole other set of the show that does not get posted because that's scripted material and you have to come see the show in person to see that.
But why did you gravitate towards the whip?
So when I was a kid, my dad did whip cracking and Indiana Jones. So I think those two things. I basically, when I was a kid, it seemed cool and I had easy access to it. So, you know, the whip that I first learned on was one of my dad's old whips that was made by the guy who made the whips for the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones. So that was the whip that thing is worth like $2,000 today. And that was the whip he handed to a 7-year-old to learn how to use, which is not a good idea. I do not advise teaching 7-year-olds to crack whips.
Yeah. That's kind of a more dangerous thing, right? Like, I don't know if you can do that today. Like, here, 3-year-old, here you go.
It's not as dangerous as people think. It's dangerous, but it's, as if you're taking the right precautions, which is wear long pants, sleeves, wear eye protection, that's the big thing, it's not too bad. I also say if you've got someone young, give them ear protection too, just because those things are loud. And I do have mild to moderate hearing loss. And, you know, you can avoid that if you just give your child some some earplugs while they're cracking their first whip, baby's first whip.
You can, they're that loud, or you just done it so much that, like...
It's a combination of it. So most of the time I actually try to not be too loud with the whips because it's louder for someone on the other end who's watching me, because the whip, when it cracks, is, you know, 6, 7, 8 feet away from me. And if I'm on a small stage, that means it's like 2 feet away from the audience. So it's right in their face when it cracks. But there are a few cracks, a few whips that I have where it's just right next to my right ear and it is loud. So I've taken hearing tests. The hearing in my right ear is so much worse than my left ear because I'm right-handed. Most of the cracking is on my right side.
How do you crack it? I've never been, like, I had a whip when I was a little kid, but I couldn't do anything with it. Like, how do you do it?
So the first thing you do is don't try to do what everyone tries to do, which is they take the whip at, like, on the ground and they just kind of flick it up and down real
right.
quick. That's a really good way to hit yourself in the eye, hit yourself on the arm. The trick is usually it's kind of like, and I've never fly fished, but I've been told that it's the exact same motion. It is the way that you would fly fish, which is you bring it back behind you, let it get fully extended, and then bring it forward. It's kind of like casting a fishing line, not perfectly the same, but it's a process. And then over time, you just kind of develop the muscle memory. I learned so long ago, I have trouble teaching people now because I'm like, just do this. It's that simple. Just do this. And they're like, I don't know what I'm doing.
I have 2 children. Like, explain to them how to run. Well, I don't know. You just
do it.
Do it. And as a person who fly fishes, like, that's exactly how you fly fish, right? You let it go all the way back, and then you just kind of snap your wrist a little bit doing
exactly
it. What do you think makes you good at it?
I think so. What I had the fortunate I had the good fortune of a couple of things. One, I grew up in the world of circus, so I've kind of learned a lot just through osmosis. When I first started really practicing whips, I found that I knew how to do a lot of the tricks just by having watched my dad do it so many times. But then the other thing was, I've been doing this show 15, 16, 17 years now. So I'm in my mid-30s. I started performing solo when I was 18 in college. And so I had essentially 13, 14 years where no one knew who I was. I was getting work, but not a ton of work. And so I had all that time to polish my show, figure out how to do this, figure out, okay, what makes people laugh, what doesn't make people laugh, and go from there. So I had a lot of time to fail off camera. And then, you know, this social media blow up didn't happen for me until October of 2021. By then, I think I was in my 13th, 14th season. So I had a lot of time to kind of figure it out.
What was that like doing something for so long and then all of a sudden, boom?
It was weird. I mean, so the initial videos that went viral actually were not my videos. They were videos of me that a fan took and put on TikTok. And suddenly these videos are going. My wife texted me while I was at work at my real job. I was working at a radio station. And she goes, my friend just sent me this asking if this is you. And so I was like, all right, well, I guess there's a demand for this after I think the second video went viral. So I was like, well, let's make a TikTok account. We've got some old show footage. Let's just put it on the internet and see what happens. And it was very quick. Within 10 days, it was like, oh, okay, all right, there's a demand for this. And then as it continued to roll, it was sort of like, okay, well, let's see if we can make this a career. And it's, I think in a lot of ways, going back to being able to fail off camera, you know, having the time that I did working both, you know, at Renaissance fairs and then also my work at working in radio, I got a chance, like sort of a taste of what it's like to be in the public eye without being a celebrity. And that kind of, I feel like I came into it not surprised, but I sort of knew, it's like, okay, this is what we do. This is how we manage expectations. This is how we manage, you know, making sure that I take time for myself, make sure I have things that are outside the public eye. Doing that was huge. And having that opportunity before this all happened was huge.
Knew how to handle it. Like there was the groundwork was laid, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've said, you know, had this happened when I was 22, I would not have been able to deal with it. I would not have been ready to deal with it. I would have turned insufferable.
Yeah. I think you see that happen to a lot of people on social media, too. What was that like kind of being in the public eye, doing the radio stuff, and then like, hey, what do you do on the side? Like, well, I do this.
I tried to not always publicly say it and be super forthcoming about it. It was not information that I would regularly volunteer, but certainly plenty of people that I interacted with knew. I remember it was very funny. I was doing a show one time and I saw a Boston city councilor who I had covered in my crowd one day. He was a terrible audience member. He was talking to his wife or his girlfriend the whole time. But I think early on there was this sense of, I think people were kind of confused. They would give you this quizzical look. They're like, wait, what? What do you do on the side? But I think after a few years, everyone kind of knew. And if they didn't know, they were just kind of like, all right. You either get this reaction of people are just shocked, or more frequently, it's kind of just that people are like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's interesting. And then they move on.
When did you start kind of including the singing in it?
That came out of just an improvised bit. I was working with another whipcracker and I was just standing there. We both had one whip. And so I'm standing there and I'm just going, ch-ch, ch-ch. And then he happened to crack just in time that we made the beat for We Will Rock You. Ch-ch, boom, ch-ch, boom. And I'm like, whoa, wait, keep that going, keep that going. And suddenly we start singing We Will Rock You. And I was like, wait a minute. You can probably do this with a bunch of stuff. So I started trying out different beats. And I had taken a ton of improv classes when I was younger, when I thought, you know, maybe I want to be an actor or something like that. And making up lyrics to songs had always been something I was, I don't know about good at, but at least, you know, at that age, proficient at. And I had done high school musicals, high school theater. So my singing voice is not, you know, no one's going to confuse me for a professional singer, but I can carry a tune decently. And so from there, it sort of became this idea of like, okay, well, let's try putting this in the show as what we call the pre-show, which is the pre-show is not your good material. The pre-show is something that's good enough, that's loud to get people to come to the show. Because Renaissance fairs, you know, you have show times, but you don't have a set crowd. So the first 5 minutes, you're essentially trying to get more people to come and see your show. And so what I realized is musical whipping, being loud, singing songs, this is a great way to get people to stop by and watch the show. And so I made that kind of the permanent fixture of the first 5 minutes of my show. And that was probably starting around 2012, I would say, was when that happened.
Are you surprised that it was like, wait, this is the thing?
No, because I mean, you look at the popularity of people like Weird Al, and you know, there's a demand for it. It's not everyone's thing. Like I see my comments every now and then where people are like, "Really? People find this entertaining?" And I'm like, "Listen, I don't know. I don't get it."
Yeah, right. Like, what are you mad at me for?
Whatever works, man.
How does that work then? You get paid by the Renaissance Fair, or people have to pay to come into the show, or is it?
It's a combination. So the most fairs are a combination of they will pay you, and then you also get tips from the audience. And the tips are where you make most of your money, usually.
Now, were you always, you can pronounce it better than I am, Zwipper?
Jacques Zwipper, yeah. So early on, so my father and I essentially helped create this act when I first moved to Renaissance Fairs when I was 20, I think. And there are kind of three pillars of what makes a good Renaissance Fair show, and you ideally should have a mix of all three, but you can get by with two of the three if those two are really high, and that's comedy, skill, and character. And when I started, my skills were so we had to lean more on the comedy and especially on the character. And Renaissance Fairs, most people are English, Irish, Scottish. You get the stray German every now and then. Very few French people. And so I was like, all right, well, let's be French. I took 5 years, 6 years of French classes. I can kind of fake it a little bit. And it kind of worked. And then I remember the last day of my first weekend doing the character, I drew on the mustache, and that seemed to make it click for everyone, which is that, oh, this is dumb. This is a skill show. This is, you know, a dangerous show, but this is still dumb. This is comedy, and we're here to have a good laugh. And nowadays, I'm so glad I made that decision because it allows people to understand that they should not be intimidated by a man holding a whip, and that this is for laughs. This is to have a good time.
What is it about Renaissance Fairs? Because it's something that I haven't personally been to, but it's been my experience that people who are into it, they are into it.
I think Renaissance Fair it's a place where you can go and be yourself, no matter how weird yourself is. So for a long time, it was a safe space for, to put it bluntly, the freaks and the geeks of our world. And I put myself in that category. But I think over the last, I would say 10 years between Game of Thrones, Witcher, The Lord of the Rings, being a nerd has become more acceptable, and of course Marvel as well. And so we've had this influx, I think, of young professionals, you know, people in their mid to late 20s, they're finally making good money. They don't yet have kids, so they have a lot of disposable income, and they have been coming to the Renaissance Fair in droves. I noticed it around 2014, 2015, where I was like, hang on, everyone who's here at this show looks like me. It looks like they're at the exact same stage of life as I am.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Except for like that family there and that old guy there. So I think there's been a big jump in that clientele. So that Renaissance Fairs have grown. And then on top of that, in the years after COVID, it was an outdoor safe space. It was an outdoor space you could go and have fun and not necessarily need to worry about being indoors with 500 other people to go see some kind of entertainment.
So maybe I'm missing out. Do you think that continues, though? Is it a flash in the pan or like, no, I think we've set a benchmark.
They've been around for 50 years, going back to the early one. I think it started in the 60s in California. And, you know, a lot of the festivals I work are in there, you know, they're 30 plus years old. They're 40 plus years old. So I don't know that they're going anywhere in the immediate future. I don't think you're going to see years like you did in 2021 was just an extraordinary year, all around. But I think, I think they're here for a good long while.
Are you ready for some harder / listener submitted questions?
Go for it.
Hardest type of whip to crack?
Stock whips. So there are essentially three kinds of whips. You have a leather bull whip, which is like an Indiana Jones whip. You have performance hybrid whips, which are a combination of a bull whip and a stock whip. And those are what you see me cracking in most of my videos. I call them my musical whips. And then stock whips, they come from Australia, used for driving stock, driving cattle. And they have this weird hinge on them where you go from the stiff handle into the braid of the whip. It's got this hinge on it, and I cannot figure out how to work those. And it's probably just because I didn't grow up cracking those. I grew up cracking my dad's bull whips. So I actually have a pair on their way to me now that I'm going to try and figure out and see if I can get better with them. But that's easily it. And that and the chain whip, just because the chain whip is, you know, you're cracking a chain. It's heavy. It's floppy. There's a really good chance you hit yourself and hurt yourself. But I put that in a whole separate category.
That leads us into this question, right? Like, what's the worst injury that you've had? Like, how often do you get hurt?
Not very often. You know, I think people think whips are a lot more dangerous than they are. Whips will leave a welt. At the most, they'll leave, you know, kind of a shallow cut. And that's if you really, really mess up. The worst I ever did was in college. I was 20 or 21. And I went to go do a side crack. And as the whip came forward, it caught the back of my neck. And I thought it was just a welt. And then I learned the next day in class that I had not left a welt. I had left a long cut across the back of my neck. And someone in class leans over to me like, Jack, what did you do to your neck? And I just look at them and I gave the whip crack motion. They're like, oh, okay, all right, we're not interested anymore.
Crack myself with a whip. Like, oh,
it happens.
Okay.
You know, we've all been there.
All right. What's your favorite song to perform?
So what I always like are songs that are a little bit slower or that have different rhyming schemes. So if it's just, you know, rhyme A, B, B, that's harder because your brain has to move faster. What I really like are songs that are slower and it's an A, B, A type of rhyme. So you have two lines before you have to come back and do the rhyme. So a good example of this is Sound of Silence. Sound of Silence is nice and slow. Everyone knows it, and you have tons of time to think up what the rhyme is going to be. So I have done Sound of Silence a bajillion times. It is never the same rhymes because every single time I'm adapting it to the situation because I have enough time to do it. Something like Eminem's Rap God, where he's making a rhyme every half second, not my favorite to do. Those are a lot harder to do.
How do you feel about Indiana Jones?
I'm a fan of Indiana Jones. I was not a fan of Indiana Jones 4. I thought Indiana Jones 5 was fine. I am very much, very much looking forward to the video game that's coming out at some point this year.
Who is your favorite fictional character with a whip? Besides, if it is Indiana Jones.
I think right now it's Richter Belmont, Trevor from the Castlevania series, Netflix series. I watched both Castlevania series they have. I really like Trevor Belmont in the original of just being just a dumb himbo who's really good at fighting vampires, which I enjoyed a lot. I thought they gave Richter a little bit more depth, and I like his costume a lot more. So I think right now I'm leaning towards Richter at the moment.
Can you really swing from a tree or from anything on a whip?
You can swing from a tree on a whip. It is not advisable. And it is not something that you should rely on. So it's easy to tie the whip around the tree. It is much harder to get the whip untied around the tree. You know, I don't know that my whip would actually survive doing that more than two or three times.
Is there an aspect of kind of like circus performance necessarily that do whips seem to do better than something else to say that if you're juggling or throwing knives or anything like that? Is there kind of a hierarchy of like, you want to make it? You get the whip.
Well, so I think my dad actually told me about this and talked to me about this when I was very, very young, where I was thinking, I was like, oh, I should learn how to juggle. And my dad said, here's the thing. Everyone can juggle. Everyone in the circus can juggle. Everyone who goes to the circus has seen a person juggle before. And so if you want to be a standout juggler, you really need to be extraordinary at it, or you need to be so funny that you essentially don't need the juggling anyway. And even then, even if you do all of that, there are 10 other jugglers who are almost as good or just as good as you, who could also do that act. Whereas, you know, I look at the Renaissance Fair circuit, there are three people who do a primarily whip based show. Myself, Adam Winrich, Aaron Bonk. So starting just from there, the level of competition is much lower. And that was, you know, when he mentioned that to me, I was like, oh, okay, you're telling me that I can get more work for less amount of practice? Yes, this sounds like a great idea. So I gravitated towards whip cracking for that reason. I also tried knife throwing. I have a knife throwing show that I don't do very often. I have some other kind of miscellaneous circus skills, plate spinning, balancing, both, you know, whether it's on a tight surface or something, let's say on my chin. Lots of other skills that I can kind of pull out, but they're not really, you know, the reaction that you get from spinning a plate is much less than what you get from cracking a whip.
I have never understood the knife throwing aspect. Is it the knife? Is it the technique? Do you have to get the distance down? Like, how do you get it?
All of the above. So what you want is you want knives that are weighted in such a way that they'll fly truer. Heavier knives are better because there's less variation on how much they rotate. You want to spin the knife as little as possible. And then for me, so I know that 9¾ steps away from the knife board is where I want to be when I'm throwing knives. The way that I throw them, the knife will rotate and it'll stick the same way every single time, as long as I can find that distance.
But if somebody gave you like a random distance, okay, I want you to do 13½ steps. Could you hit it, or like, no, it has to be this distance?
I couldn't consistently do it. I was amazed. I was sharing a stage with a guy named Cy the Sword Swallower in Colorado, and he does a knife throwing show. And I was watching him and I was like, Cy, I'm looking at the stage, because normally you tape where your mark is, where you need to stand. You tape where the board needs to be and where you need to be. And I'm looking, I'm like, Cy, where are your marks? How are you figuring this out? And he goes, oh, and he walks up to the board, starts throwing knives and stepping back, you know, about a foot each time, and every single one of those knives stuck. And I was like, what? How do you do that? He goes, I don't know, I practice a lot. I'm like, Jesus, man.
That doesn't seem to really go along with like the laws of physics. I don't know if it's physics, but I would think like, no, it's not gonna rotate again that fast.
He's that good where he can just eyeball the distance and change how much the knife is rotating.
Okay, so we're looking at a video. Most bullwhip, let me make sure the audio is off.
Yeah, this is when I think I did 287 cracks. So this is actually not the current record, because I broke this record in 2020. But this is me swinging a whip back and forth 287 times, well, 290 times, but I missed a few cracks in it. And this was a record that I spent most recently. I spent about 2 years training, 6 hours a day working, or 6 days a week working out, 3 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off. Spent 2 years doing that, put on 15 pounds of muscle to do this record, and then promptly had shoulder surgery for unrelated reasons and lost all that muscle. I went from looking like Captain America to looking like my normal self, which was sad.
You need that much muscle to do that?
At the point that we had put it, you did. Because I had been going back and forth with Adam Winrich for a few years, and I wanted to just finally put it way out of reach. So I in COVID, I decided, you know what, screw it. I don't have anything else going on. I'm just going to work out as much as I can, put on as much muscle as I can, and see, you know, how high I can put this mark.
I think that's the thing with like whips, though. It's one of those things where like you look at it and like, I could do that. Is it a lot harder than people think that it is?
I mean, cracking a whip in and of itself is not difficult. The record is difficult, because I was one of those guys where I looked at the record, I'm like, I can do that. And then I tried it and I was like, oh, that's a lot harder than I realized. And so, you know, I think getting to where I am as a whip cracker, someone could probably do in 6 months to a year if they were dedicated. And I've been cracking whips for, like I said, you know, 20, almost 30 years. But then getting the record, it has to be basically your sole focus at this point for a year plus at where Adam and I have set it.
Oh, here's knife throwing.
It's not actual knife throwing. This I just posted this morning.
Oh, okay.
This is me showing off all those other tricks that I learned and that I don't actually do in the show anymore because no one cares about them.
Is that? Oh, there is magic. Look at that.
There's a little bit of magic. It's not good magic.
Why is plate spinning in the Renaissance fair? Is that an old-timey thing?
No, it's just a circus thing. So my dad's show was called the Super Scientific Circus, still is called the Super Scientific Circus, where you teach science through circus tricks. And so one of those was plate spinning, because it teaches about centripetal and centrifugal force. And I had a lot of days backstage where just sat there spinning plates because it was the only thing to do. Oh, there you go. Indiana Jonesing with my dad.
Here you go.
So this was where we tried all the things that Indiana Jones does in the movies with one of my dad's old whips, made by the guy who made the whips for Indiana Jones, who's dead now. And so, you know, that whip is worth more than I am. All of those whips are worth more than I am. But he had these whips, and the new Indiana Jones movie was coming out this past summer, last summer. And I was like, well, let's try and do some Indiana Jones tricks with the whips. Like, there's a flash that he does in the first Raiders movie. That's actually harder than it looks. Disarming an armed attacker. So I had him hold out a bat, pulled the bat out. It worked far better than I expected it to. And then trying to swing from a tree branch. So for this, we did not use one of those whips because I didn't want to break it. But we used an 8-foot whip, caught around it perfectly. And I don't have it here. But it took me about 3 minutes to untie it from the tree. I have it in the bloopers reel that I think I posted later, because it's really hard to actually untie a whip once you've tied. You know, you spent so much of your life trying to not get your whips tangled or like tie them into knots, because they will do that sometimes, and then trying to do it intentionally is really hard.
That's cool. So there's different ways to crack it.
Yeah, so front crack, back crack, over the head crack, side crack. These are not the official terms. And then I say we will not be demonstrating the butt crack. Obviously not that kind of show. You can see that show somewhere else, but not with me. But there are all sorts of different techniques that you can use for whip cracking. I think the one that's most common, you know, that front crack, is called either the circus crack or the cattleman's crack, because it was how cattlemen would crack whips. There's another one called the coachman's crack, where you don't want it to crack out front, because then you're going to be whipping, you know, the oxen or the horses that are pulling your carriage. And so what you do is you kind of add this stutter into your hand so that it cracks right next to your right ear and makes you lose hearing for a few seconds. I don't like that crack.
This is what I always wonder about people who do circus performance and any kind of thing where they have to have, like, how many copies of that outfit do you have? Are you just wearing the same one all the time?
I have three different sets. I have three vests. I have four shirts. I have three of those sashes. The pants right now, I have four, but I'm having four brand new pair. Or no, I have three, because I sent one of them off to a woman who's making me four more pair of pants. And then the socks, I have probably like 7 or 8 pair of socks. And then the shoes, I have 5 or 6 pair of those.
Yeah. Now, wait, does anybody just wear the same one every day? Like, ooh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it gets gross. So for a while, I only had two, which was usually fine because I'm performing, you know, on weekends. But then you would have that stray, that rogue 3-day weekend, let's say around like Memorial Day weekend or Labor Day weekend. And that Labor Day Monday, oh, boy, would I smell bad. Because it's also, you know, it's late August, early September. It's still warm. It's, you know, even if you're in the Northeast in Boston, which is where I usually was, it's hot and it's humid and it's muggy. I mean, like, not like what you get in Arizona, but yes. The humidity helps, or doesn't help, I should say.
So how hard was this to do?
So these whips are so freaking heavy, and I have my shoulders are Swiss cheese, as I always like to say. They've got lots of damage with them. So I start with a 5-pound chain whip, which is heavy, but it's crackable. I can do most of what I want. But this other one is a 10-pound chain whip, and the whole time I'm swinging this, being like, oh God, just don't dislocate your shoulder trying to crack this thing, because you can feel it pulling on you. The weight is there. I mean, you say, oh, it's only 10 pounds, but it's also 8 feet long, and just, you know, the centrifugal force. I always have to remember, is it centripetal or centrifugal? The centrifugal force is just pulling on your arm so much that I have to just like tuck everything in there to make sure nothing comes out.
That's pretty much all the questions that I got. Is there anything that you think that we missed, and what's kind of coming up next for you? Where can people find you?
Best way to find me is I'm going on tour in just a few days. Busy 2024 ahead. The full schedule, the easiest way to find it is at jackthewhipper.com or jacqueszwhipper.com or jackleppiars.com. No one knows how to spell any of my names, so I got all three domain names, and they will all take you to my website, which has my full schedule. Otherwise, give me a follow, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. I'm on all the platforms, and just about all the platforms get all the same content.
I want to thank Jack so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included his information in the episode description. If you want to see him perform some of the things that we talked about, the YouTube version of this interview will be live on February 29th at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. So real quick, I want to take a moment and thank one of the sponsors of our show, Joy Mode. Joy Mode is a sexual performance booster. So whether you're looking to spice up your more intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode can help with an all-natural, science-backed approach. And right now, they're offering their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, which is every man's solution to increase blood flow, firmness, stamina, and performance. And right now, they're offering a special discount to our listeners. You can redefine your intimacy by going to usejoymode.com for 20% off with code POINTLESS. That's 20% off plus free shipping with code POINTLESS. I'm usually really skeptical about stuff like this. Like, oh, okay, all right. But I tried it this weekend. And I don't know if the wife was happy, but I was impressed. Okay, now let's bring in John Schull and get to the pointless part of the show. Okay, would you rather work for $500,000 a year or get $75,000 a year for free?
How involved is the job that I'll be making 500? Is it a 9 to 5, or am I on call all the time? Is it a very involved job?
Normalish job, like nothing crazy. There's no big catch to it.
I would take the 75 grand.
I would take the 75 grand too. I think it's because as you get older, your time becomes more valuable and you just rather have the time.
Yeah, you don't realize that as you're a young person working.
I wondered how close this was going to be. I asked the audience, so what do you think the percentage is? What percentage of people do you think put work for $500,000? What percentage do you think said take the $75,000 for free?
Well, I want to think that it would be pretty lopsided with people saying the $500,000 job. But I'm going to say it's probably pretty even.
It is actually pretty even. 56% said work for $500,000. 44% said take the $75,000. I think that has changed, though. I think that in the last couple of years, people have really started to question the value of, not the value, but the idea of working all of your life. And like, you know what? I'm pretty okay. I don't really need to do all this.
Sometimes managing people is not worth the hassle at all. Sometimes just staying where you're at and just making that steady salary, not having all the responsibilities, kind of awesome. And secondly, I just think that the generation after us is going to prove so many things in terms of working, like working 4-day work weeks, things that generations before us and us would have been like, wow, why didn't we stand up for that? Like, you know, we could have done it.
I think one of the big things that's going to change in our society is that we are a society, at least in the United States, that is based around the idea of growth. We got more people, more growth, more everything. And now we're looking for the first time at a society that is not growing. And that's going to lead to fundamental changes in how we view everything. Okay, no pipe dream jobs. Not like, I want to be an NFL quarterback. Or you want to be a professional wrestler, which is, I know what's your real dream. But if you could start your life over, what job would you do? Like, if you could make the same amount of money, do all the same things, like, what job would you really want to do?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I'd love to be a coach, whether it be a high school coach or a you know, a college coach or something like that, a teacher. I'd also love to give acting a try. Not like real acting, but bullshit acting, something like that. I don't know. I mean, I can tell you this, and I say this with love, and I'm not afraid to admit this. If I could go back and do it over again, I would not have chosen this career path. I would do something different. And I don't want that for people to think that I don't like what I'm doing now, but, you know, I definitely would try something different.
I don't know if I would change what I did, but if I had my dream, like the thing that I would really want to do would be a carpenter. Like, I would love to just be outside building stuff, like working with your hands. I would love to be a carpenter. But also some of that is probably because I have no DIY, do-it-yourself talent whatsoever. Like, you give me an IKEA desk, it's going to be at least 2 weeks.
Jesus, man. I mean, that's actually a good question. Is on a scale from 1 to 10, with 5 being you're self-sufficient at most house things, like changing a light bulb, you know, mounting a TV, where are you on that scale?
If it's just kind of replacing stuff or simple fixes, I'm actually not that bad. Like, if I've got a plumbing issue, I can usually fix that. If it's something where, like, I can clearly see how to take this thing apart and put it back together, then I can do it. My problem is tools and patience. And I've definitely kind of, like, going back to our poll question in the sense that, like, look, I could spend 6 hours figuring out how to do this, or I can call someone and pay them to do it in an hour.
Well, someone near and dear to me has this motto. It's either time or money. So which one, you know, what do you want to spend? Do you want to spend the money, or do you want to spend the time doing it? Which I think is a question that you only think of as you get older.
Yeah. Young me would say spend the time. Old me would say spend the money.
Yeah, I would definitely spend the money. I mean, I'm surprised you haven't brought this up yet, that I am the guy that used to pay for a lawn service.
It's ridiculous. You're not supposed to pay for it. Mow your own yard.
I do, and I love
it.
You
might as well let another man come in and have sex with your wife. If you have lawn service, you are essentially allowing another man to have sex with your wife, metaphorically speaking. No. You are letting another man mow your yard.
Listen, all you men out there and women who hire people to do your lawns, don't listen to him. He's not. That's not true.
I'm sorry. I have nothing against lawn service professionals. I have nothing against that industry. I think that trade work generally is one of the most undervalued aspects of our society. No, I think that trade work in terms of like plumbers, electricians, those kind of jobs, like wait till that stuff breaks and that stuff's incredibly important. But I don't think that a man should allow another man to mow his yard. It should be done by yourself. Unless it needs to be 5 acres or more.
I would say five acres.
More mow than your own lawn.
Half acre would be more than enough.
I really don't have any concept of how big an acre is, to be honest with you.
I think it's a lot bigger.
Is it pretty big? That's like one of those things. Like, I have no concept of how big that is. Like an acre. Like, oh, okay.
Let's just put it this way. If you put your house and my house and our combined yardage together, we still wouldn't have an acre, I don't think. So,
probably not. That's probably pretty big. Okay, 1 acre then. If you can walk across your yard in less than 5 minutes, you need to mow it.
Wow, that's awesome.
That is my official statement.
All right, we'll start here. Richard Murray, Grady Nettles. I like the name Grady. I don't know why, but I like it. It's good.
It's a good one.
Benjamin Shields, Jim Doubt, Alex Moodley, Ethan Welke, Gabe D, Sam Robichaud, or maybe it's Robichaud.
Robichaud, probably.
Omar Khan, Tyler Tidwell, Uso Matuatia. Love that.
Well, I think you actually pronounced that right, too.
I hope I did, because if not, I butchered it. Joey Verhesian and Colton Gaines. Congratulations. You all get this, I don't know, the gold star? Maybe we'll send you a t-shirt in 6 years? I have no idea.
Someday.
All right, you ready for some
rapid fire? Yeah.
Some rapid fire questions here. That's going to take us 20 minutes again.
Bring it, MF-er.
All right, first one. I hope you've seen these incidents or it's going to make no sense, but we'll okay. try it anyways. Okay. Storming the court during basketball games.
Necessary evil. I think that that's a necessary evil. I know some guy got hurt and it like ruined his season or something like that, but those sports only exist because of the fans. Like, to me, should that guy have gotten hurt? Absolutely not. But I think that that's a necessary evil along with sports, that you only exist because the fans are willing to pay for this, and you got to let the fans do what they want a little bit. Like, you got to acknowledge that, look, I know that you want to win. I know that you think this is all about your championship, but no, it's about making money, and you don't make money without the fans. So get over it.
Some would argue, if you haven't seen it, I suggest checking out. It'll be a few days old by the time this comes out, but it's Duke, Wake Forest. Wake Forest upsets Duke. As Nick said, the Duke player is kind of running off the court. It almost looks like to me that he extends his arms to push somebody and then trips somebody, and then he gets run into. But regardless, I agree with you. It is a necessary evil.
I think, like, if you looked at it from a business standpoint, right, there's the cost of doing business, and there's always some things that are the cost of doing business, and I think that's the cost of doing business.
I mean, yes. Here's my 20-second thing on it. I don't know if I'm okay in any sporting event where you have, we'll say hundreds, if not almost 1,000 at times, people just randomly running onto the court when you have athletes and coaches and team personnel on the court. I mean, I just feel like you're asking for a disaster.
That's why when I hear all these people on TV complaining about this, it's like, what? You want to get thousands of people, get them super hyped up about their team, give them a bunch of alcohol, and then be surprised when this happens? Like, you called the devil. Don't be surprised when he shows up.
Yeah, praise Jesus. Father, yeah. Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost coming out.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it from people about like, oh my God, these fans. I can't believe they did this. Well, I can't believe they did the thing that we wanted them to do.
All right. Completely flipping the script here. Cheez-Its.
Oh, I love... Go through phases. I go through phases with Cheez-Its. Once a year, I'm going to go through a Cheez-It phase where I'm going to try just about every flavor they have. Overall, I would say that I like them, but I'm going to choose chips over Cheez-Its every time.
Okay. Well, follow-up question. What kind of Cheez-Its? Is there only one kind, or are you going with like Parmesan? Are you going with Grooves, or are you just going with the originals?
I've had Grooves, and I thought that they were pretty good, but for the most part, I just want the cheesiest flavor of anything.
Okay. All right. Moving on, here's another food-related item. Boba tea.
Oh, I've started to really like it. Actually, okay. I don't really like it, but I really like to take my two sons to go get it because they like boba tea, and it's not really that expensive, and it's like, hey, you got boba tea. Okay. It's like $3, and like, here you go, and then they're happy for the rest of the day.
I've never had it, but I think I'm going to try it in the next couple of weeks. I'll have to report back to you on it.
I am generally against any kind of drink that has calories in it. I just find it to be a complete waste of time, whether that be boba tea, juice, any kind of drink that has calories. Like, if I'm going to have any kind of calories, I want to fill my stomach up in a way. Like, I don't want to just drink them. I need to feel like I had them.
Let's see here.
God, I'm old.
Yeah, that was very old, but I wasn't going to say anything. Ooh. Which you definitely sounded like an old man right there.
I just turned into like an... That was bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. yeah, you definitely...
This is why I don't want to talk about your stupid lawn.
You brought it up.
You actually brought it up, I believe.
Maybe. how important is a good pillow to you? Is it the most important piece of bedding?
I can honestly sleep on just about any pillow as long as it's not too big. I just get used to whatever I'm doing. My wife goes through pillows every, like, I swear we get a new one every damn week.
Yeah,
but I'm okay. It. Like, pillow's not that big of a deal to me, man. I'll sleep on a rock, to be honest with you.
No, you wouldn't. That sounds terrible.
It's actually pretty uncomfortable, honestly. But I can sleep. All I really need, look, man, I've passed out on the floor many a time. All I need really is my own arms to lay on.
Okay. Let's see here. Cillian Murphy. He seems to be the hot actor
right
now.
Which one is he?
Starred in Oppenheimer. He was also in a show called Peaky Blinders.
He is one of the more distinct looking people. That's a distinct looking person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
I don't know. I like him in the sense that he seems to be one of those actors that, like, look, this is just my job and this is what I do, and I don't really want to deal with any of the other parts of it. Like, just show up, do the job, and go home.
There is a pretty famous clip of him at Cannes or one of those movie festivals where you can just tell he is so annoyed for having to stop in every 30 seconds, you know, right cheek, left cheek, smile. He just wants to get in and start drinking shots, I think.
Well, man, that's the way to do it. It's just a job.
Just a job. Just a job. Speaking of a job, I don't know why I wrote this one down, but door greeters. How are you feeling about door greeters?
I like to be welcomed into a place. I like to be welcomed into a business. I'm going to go on a rant here now. This is my big problem with America at this point right now. Not America, actually. This is my big problem, I think, in society today, is that businesses have gone from trying to earn our business by providing us with a good service or a product. They've gone from trying to earn our business to figuring out ways to take it. And it's ruined things for us.
I agree with you. I want a store to want me, but at the same point, I'm also the person that just wants to go in and get out. I don't want to be confronted. I don't want to be talked to. I stopped going to stores like Best Buy and places like that because of all the in-store advertisement people they would have. It felt like you couldn't walk down an aisle without having someone say, "Why, hello, sir. Do you have AT&T? Or, you know, something like that.
You must have a much more approachable demeanor than I have, because nobody ever approaches me in places.
I get approached everywhere I go. Everything I get approached for. It's ridiculous.
No one, like, if there's one of those people that's, like, out on the street trying to get you for a signature or whatever, I never get approached by those people.
Yeah, I do get kind of a stink face, though. Like if, for instance, if someone's coming up to me in, like, say, a grocery store with a petition and they want me to sign it, I'll just be like, no, not today. And then they'll go away. But, yeah, I get approached all the time.
Man, I don't know if I'm jealous of you or envious of you or what the word is, or proud not to be you. Like, I kind of want to be approached. Like, I want somebody to ask me every once in a while. But
no, be happy. Be happy you're not approached. Because the next and last topic I'm going to ask you about are these goddamn Girl Scouts selling their goddamn cookies every goddamn where.
I think that Girl Scout cookies are another necessary evil of the world. I don't want Girl Scout cookies. I don't like Girl Scout cookies. I don't want to be approached about Girl Scout cookies. I don't want to tell the Girl Scouts no. But I think it's good for the kids to be out there doing it. They just, for me, the particular lesson that they're going to learn is about how the world is a hard place and you're going to get a no.
We both know that, because everyone does this, that if you are approached by those damn girls, you're going to fold. They're only $5 a box.
Nope. I have never bought Girl Scout cookies. Never.
Never?
Never.
Wow. I bought probably 5 boxes a season alone.
Wow, I've never bought them. Well, never have bought Girl Scout cookies. Not when somebody, what I really annoys me is when somebody pulls that crap at work. Hey, my kid's selling cookies with a, don't bring that crap to work, man. Don't bring that to work. I don't think that there should be any kind of that activity, like funding for a birthday gift, a wedding gift, or anything like that for work. Nothing. Maybe a sympathy card if you lose a loved one, but that's the only thing that I'm willing to do. Anything else was like, man, this is a job. Don't want to do it. Well, don't want to get you anything. I don't want anything from you. I want a paycheck. That's
just
it.
Just a job, right?
Just a job.
All right, that's all I got. What's the top five today?
Oh, our top five. Top five flavors of Doritos. What's your number? There's a lot more than you would think.
Yeah, there's a lot, and I'm curious because I have no idea where you're going to go with your list, except I hope it's not the one you messaged me about the other day. My number five, spicy sweet chili.
Hmm. There are two flavors that I have tried recently. I just don't remember exactly which one it was. It was either spicy sweet chili or salsa verde that I did not like. I just don't remember which one it was, but I didn't like it. I was like, oh, I don't like that.
Okay.
It might have been spicy sweet chili.
Well, that's a shame because it's delicious.
My number five is Cool Ranch.
Number five?
Number five. Cool Ranch.
That's
overrated the whole way around. Not that great. I mean, it's great, but it's not that great of flavor. Number five is Cool Ranch. I stand by it. The foot is down.
Well, not only do I have Cool Ranch on the list, but my number four is Flamin' Hot Cool Ranch.
They're really starting to roll out some flavors. That Flamin' Hot's a little too spicy for me. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, how much spice do you generally like?
10.
Oh, you'll go all the way? But can you eat, like, just go through a bag, like, not have to take a break with something really spicy?
Not really. I mean, yeah, not really. It also depends a lot, though. There's a lot that goes into, like, how spicy things actually are in addition to how spicy they can be. You know, if you've had a lot of salt, if you're drinking beer. But, yeah, I mean, none of these chips that I've ever had, I've been like, damn, I can only have a couple of those.
I still get confused between the difference between medium and mild. I can never remember, is medium spicier than mild or is mild spicier than medium?
Usually goes mild, medium, hot is the way.
To me, though, mild is medium.
No.
I've always been confused by this. I'm always like, which one's hotter, medium or mild?
It just isn't. But what's your number four?
Spicy nacho. That's as much spice as I'm willing to go is spicy nacho.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to have, you know, the original on here somewhere. But, I'm fine with that. That's a good one.
I don't think spicy nacho is the original, by the way. I think that's a new flavor. I think you're thinking of nacho cheese.
Yeah, right. I mean, you have to have like a cheese-flavored one.
Okay. What's your number three?
Which I think they technically all are, but so my number three, actually, it's a version of Doritos, brand new actually within the last couple of months, but Dinamita Chili Limon Doritos. Delicious. Delicious.
I don't generally like a lemon flavored anything.
It's actually limon.
You know what that stands for, though, right?
Like, yeah, you have to say lemon. You can't say lemon. It's lemon.
It might be lime, honestly.
Lemon.
Lime. Could be lime.
I'm not sure. I failed my Spanish classes.
Oh. Wait, so is it lemon or is it lime?
You put the lime in the coconut.
Is it lime or lemon? Oh, it is lime. So it is lime. That would make more sense than having lemon flavored. Okay, we were wrong. I don't generally like a lime flavored chip.
I mean, I wasn't going to correct you, but I kind of knew it was lime. No one has lemon chips, man.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very good. What's the weirdest flavor of chip you've ever had? Like, that was a weird flavor.
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, there's a local company up here that makes some pretty weird ones. Like, I always find, like, dill pickle is weird. But it tastes delicious.
Yeah. I've had ketchup-flavored chips in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah, I live in Seattle. Canada is close, and you've had, like, ketchup-flavored chips. They're okay.
I've had Coney Dog-flavored chips. Those have been kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't really like a lot of weird flavors. Chips need to be basic flavors. My number three is a newer one. It's Loaded Taco.
Okay, that sounds good. I don't think I've had that one yet.
It's good. It's up there. I would put it up there, right? Like I said, I put it above Cool Ranch. It's a flavor that has a lot of possibilities. I don't think the other flavors that they have, like new flavors, are really going to go anywhere, but I think Loaded Taco is going to be here.
Yeah,
it's going to be here to stay.
Just flipping that salad, that taco salad.
What?
What? Our number two, or my number two, rather, just the what started it all, nacho cheese.
My number two is also nacho cheese. I think nacho cheese is the appropriate, is appropriate at number two.
Well, my number one, what should be everybody's number one, Cool Ranch, baby.
I just don't, I'm always like, okay, I think nacho cheese is better. My number one is zesty cheese, which is a flavor that I have only seen in Canada. Like I said, I live in Seattle. We go to Canada fairly recently, and they have fairly frequently, and they have zesty cheese, which comes in an orange bag, and it's the best. It's the best Dorito flavor. I have no idea why they wouldn't have it in the United States.
I mean, you kind of mentioned it earlier, because companies don't care about us. If they cared exactly. about us, we'd have zesty cheese Doritos.
It's fantastic. What's I would say honorable mention, but there's a couple that we left out. Did you mention sweet and tangy barbecue?
No, because I've. This is gonna sound weird, but to, barbecue chips are barbecue chips. Doritos are not barbecue chips.
Right, I can agree with that. I can agree with that. I generally that I would say barbecue chip is my least favorite flavor of chip. I generally don't like hey, you want barbecue? Like no.
Yeah, I mean, it's not what I'm reaching for first, I'll tell you that.
I also generally, I will eat them, but I also generally don't like salt and pepper vinegar or vinegar flavored.
Takes a certain occasion for me to enjoy a bag of vinegar chips.
Some other ones that got left out, salsa verde comes in a green bag.
No, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm good with that, too. They also have spicy sweet chili. It's one of the new flavors that I was like, that's, but I don't know if it was sweet and tangy barbecue, spicy sweet chili. I think it was actually spicy sweet chili that I was like, oh, I don't like that at all.
Well, that's why it's on my number, on my top five list, because it's delicious.
Okay. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's the whole thing. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. Really helps us out. Just a couple of quick words. And let us know what you think the best flavor of Doritos is. And if you're in other countries, let us know what kind of Doritos you got. I will travel to another country just for Doritos. Cool Ranch is overrated. So real quick, I want to take a minute and thank one of the sponsors of our show, Joy Mode. Joy Mode is a sexual performance booster. So whether you're looking to spice up intimate moments or just increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode takes an all-natural, science-backed approach using supplements that are peer-reviewed by scientists.